The 1895 podcast is brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. The 1895, the official Shelburne podcast, exclusive to Patreon.
The ball sinks in towards where Davy Rogers is up. Rogers sweeps the left! Oh, Davy Rogers! Oh, what a goal by Davy Rogers!
I'm angry, Tony, I have to be honest.
Murray! Martin Shelburne! Noel Murray! Has she won it for the Reds? What a goal!
Here's a chance up. Shane Farrell at Chelsea 2-0.
I'm sorry, Tony, but I'm angry as well. I was angry before the game. I've been angry for a long time.
And she gets the winning goal here. Slattery into the back of the net. That is what champions do. That is what winners do. Pearl Slattery.
Over the top by Sullivan. Hughes, goal. Shelburne lead.
His cross sticks the biggest.
Kilduffy is the substitute and he scored! Shell's lead!
We are in to the 94th minute and yeah! It's all over!
Shelburne FC are first division champions!
It's our just reward. We deserve this. We deserve this big time.
Here's your host, Stephen Doody.
Hello, welcome to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. And as always, we're brought to you in association with our proud media partners, Off the Ball. It's another week of the gruesome twosome. Darren Cleary, welcome to the pod again.
Bebop and Rocksteady.
Yeah, and we had a little special guest, handsome Keith McDerby, last week. I think the interview went down well.
Yeah, Keith is giving himself a lot of praise and credit for it. I don't know if anyone else enjoyed it, but he did. I know I'm stacking Keith. He's brilliant. It was great to get him on and for people to kind of see what he does. I think a lot of people can conflate, you know, match day to people's entire existence. Like if someone's match day isn't that mental, you're like, oh, well, what are they doing all week? So it's good for him to come on and kind of talk through a little bit about what his role entails. And I think with Tony the previous week as well doing it, I think giving people an understanding of what's happening off the pitch is really, really good. Sometimes we can be a bit too focused on doing it rather than, you know, telling everyone we're doing it. I think we could probably get a bit better at patting ourselves on the back. Some people don't like that. Some people think it's, you know, you're missing a trick not doing it. But yeah, it's great to have the likes of Keith on and Tony on. And hopefully in the next few weeks as well, we'll get Barry, the CEO, on to talk a bit about how he's settling in.
Yeah, Keith was great. He's open and honest, as Keith always is. Maybe too honest at times, but no, I like having people, you know, away from the match day involvement, if you like, on, because there's so many things going on in the background in the club all the time that I don't think people actually realise it. So like, Keith gave a small insight into what his day-to-day can look like, and we could have sat there for another hour easily going through some of the mad stuff he's had to do. So, yeah, another solid guest behind us. Finally, Dazzler, our women's Premier Division team, got to get back to action this week. It's pretty much like a new season for them, really, at this stage, isn't it?
Yeah, 10 weeks without a game, and geez, they look sharp. Obviously, just before the restart, Noel shared the news of four new signings, and they've had to look outside of Ireland. They've brought in players with a bit of international experience, but it was the old reliable, Noel Murray, my God. The skill involved in that goal. I'm sure you've seen it by now, Doody, but
yes.
It was a really, really positive performance. I know there was Treaty were a bit aggrieved by the way they were built up in the build up to the game, and there was a talk around how do clubs like the likes of Cork and Treaty, if they're taking heavy beatings regularly enough in the league, how do they find the motivation? And they probably pinned that to their dressing room wall. But I think it was a good performance. It was, you know, obviously a tricky test to navigate. So brilliant to get back with a win. The only shame was that it could have been a very important win had Piemont not left it very late to snatch all 3 points. It would have made it a very, very interesting few weeks. But, you know, the pressure is all on them. Everyone else is chasing them. And I think Shells have done the impossible before. So perfect to get back to winning ways. And I think it sets us up nicely for what will be a run-in that I'm sure has plenty more drama left in it. I don't think there's a title race done yet.
And just you mentioned there about Piemont, the late winner. I flicked through the fixtures that afternoon and I was like, right, this could be the one. This could be the one. If they slip up here, the pressure might get to them because they don't have to play ourselves or Rovers in that last bunch of games. So you're kind of pinning a lot of hope on that one. But look, stranger things have happened. We've been on the good end of madness in the back end of a season. So hopefully there'll be more madness. But just the importance of winning that game, I thought, in the build-up to obviously the Champions League now is coming up in 2 weeks, I think it is. So it just felt like a really big game. I think if you drop points there on Saturday against Treaty, you're kind of going, ah, we'll just pin everything now in the Champions League and the Cup. But it's still alive. Still have just hung in there. And I think loads of people said it was a big dip in form for the team. It wasn't a big dip in form. It's just, I think timing was a killer. Other teams picked up points when we didn't, and that kind of little gap popped up. But it's just so important to still be alive going into that last little bit of the season. And look, the focus, I think there's one more game now, isn't there? Actually, Dazzler, while we're on it, you mentioned it last week. Do you want to just mention it again from the Reds hat-trick point of view?
Yeah, look, it's there was kind of a real belief that it would be important to do something to get people into the ground. And, you know, I think Tony said sometimes opening the gates on a Saturday or turning the lights on a Friday night is not going to be something that will just be the way of growing your audience. So what we want to do is have a high visibility campaign. We want to not just pin it on one game, because unfortunately, you can do a big song and dance around one fixture, but if people aren't free that weekend, or they've got plans or birthdays or barbecues or whatever it may be, holidays still for a lot of people, you know, it doesn't make a difference in their lives. So what the club wants to do is give people the option to sample three games or one of the three games. It's the Reds Hat-Trick Initiative. It starts on the 2nd of September, Shells against Athlone at Talca Park. Then the next one is Shells against Sligo Rovers on the 18th of October, and that's obviously a Wednesday night game. And then the big one, like, to open the doors free of charge for the Dublin Derby, Shells against Bows, Saturday 4th of November, Talca Park, 2 o'clock. Free tickets for all. It's very, very simple to avail of those free tickets. Just go to shelburnefc.ie/hattrick. If you use one of the match days, if you use all of the match days, it doesn't make a difference. If you can't go to all of them, still opt in. And if you're a season ticket holder, do try and get down to the games. Like, there's almost, I think, close to 1,200 season ticket holders, probably 400 or 500 people at a game every week. There's a massive kind of untapped audience for that women's team on a Saturday from season ticket holders. Anyone who has kind of embraced getting down to Talca on a Saturday, or be it to the away games, has had a very positive experience. It adds an awful lot to the kind of the Shells match week to have a Saturday in Talca. So I'd encourage anyone to get down. I think it's a great initiative. Obviously, the club have gone for growing the game over profits, because obviously, you know, there'd be gate receipts for certainly that Bows game, and, you know, you'd have some few bob in from the Sligo game, the Athlone game, but the money is secondary to the concern of getting some people in, growing the community, and trying to capitalize on that interest after the World Cup, because there are a lot of people who are sampling women's football for the first time. The World Cup was a great way of getting on their radar, and they might live in Drumcondra, they'd like live in Fairview, Merino, Glasnevin, and they mightn't realise that quality of football with the type of players that are at the World Cup, you know, they can see them every Saturday at Talca Park. So, yeah, personally, probably biased, but I think it's a great initiative, and I think it's a brilliant way to get people in the gate, you know, non-committal. Try it. If you like it, come back. If you don't, no harm, no foul. It's open to everyone, individuals, all age. It's not a youth orientated endeavor. It's for anyone. So whether you're 80 or 8 years of age, you're welcome to Talca Park. There's also groups available. So if you want to book as a group, you can do so. A couple of people have been on who've signed up and obviously haven't got their tickets yet. The tickets will go out the week of the Athlone game, and it will be for the following three games. So keep an eye if you signed up on your email around about that time, probably the Wednesday before the Athlone game, the tickets for the initiative will go out. But yeah, look, I think it's a great way of highlighting some of the brilliant players and brilliant standard of football you have most Saturdays at Talca.
Speaking of brilliant players, Noel Murray and Maggie Pierce, big congratulations. They've got into the team of the week. for their performances in that treaty game. So that's just a snippet of the talent that's on show on Saturdays across that women's Premier Division. So do get out, avail of that. What is a great offer. I love the idea of having more than one chance. I mean, the amount of times you see, you know, you could do like a fan day and have free admission, but then, like as you say, life gets in the way. Sometimes people can't make it and then it's a missed opportunity. But, I mean, if you can't make yourself available for one of those three dates, you're probably just very, very busy. Look, coming up for the Women's Premier Division teams, well, we haven't really spoken about it on the pod just yet, is that Champions League and the draw and where it is. So, for anyone who doesn't know and maybe wasn't tuned into it last year, the way the draw works is you're basically putting a group of four, but it's not, you know, it's not a group as such. It's two semi-finals and then it goes into a final. Winner of the final progresses on to the next stage. So, Shells, I mean, I remember watching the draw at the time. You're kind of, there's a bit of uncertainty with those draws because, like, some massive names are in it, but just because they're a massive name in men's football does not mean that they're as successful in the women's game. And the same, you might see a team name you're not sure of in the women's draw and you think, oh, that might be a handy draw, but can be extremely successful. So the Shells four, if you like, is FC Gintra. They're from Lithuania. They're going to host the mini tournament, essentially. Cardiff City and Shells will play Glasgow City in the semi-final. So as draws go, there might actually be a similarity, Dazzler, is there, between, you know, the likes of a Glasgow City and maybe what Shells are playing against week in, week out in terms of the style of football?
Certainly the style. I think the standard of football is, it's always that bit of unknown. Like, you don't know what you're going to face, you know, around Europe. Like, the team, I think, acquitted themselves really, really well last year. Desperately unlucky. Like, I remember in that first game, pretty much control that Glasgow are obviously the team to beat in Scotland. Like, they're a bit like Shells. They nearly win every week. I think they'll have real quality. It'll be very, very difficult and tricky. It's that bit of an unknown as well, because we're coming off the back of that long break. Obviously, I think the games against Treaty and Athlone are going to be absolutely vital in getting match fitness and sharpness ready for it. Like, to be in this position, to be, you know, the owners talk about competing for leagues and winning leagues and getting to Europe. We have a team at this football club that's already doing that. So I think it's so important that the whole club get behind them in whatever way you can, whether it's, you know, traveling out to the game, which a few brave souls will, and they'll dedicate the time and resources and money to do so. And they deserve massive amounts of credit, even anyone who traveled last year as well, too. I know it was a bit of a trains, planes, automobiles to get to it. But yeah, anyway, you can support the team, whether it's, you know, sharing the stuff on social, whether it's messages of good luck, whether it's, you know, watching the stream when the details become available for that. Anything at all will go a long, long way, because I think this team have been unbelievable ambassadors for the club. They've been standard setters on the pitch. They're unbelievable people. Like, they're proper Reds, and I think they deserve everyone in the club behind them over the next few weeks.
They do indeed. And just on the travel end of it, like, when you would have seen the four, or obviously the other three teams in the group, you would have looked and went, oh, Cardiff or Scotland, you know, you could get a really sizable contingent over to a game there. Lithuania maybe will just be a step too far for the vast majority, but as you say, there's already a few hardy souls are all ready to go, and hopefully they have a good time out in Lithuania, and the Reds will hopefully progress into the next round.
It was a bit of a mad one, because I remember we were in the Aviva the day of the draw, and Liam Ward was there. He was involved in working on the live stream. And there was, obviously the draw came out. We're like, okay, so we have a Welsh team, a Scottish team, an Irish team, and a Lithuanian team. Great. We'll keep the costs down. We'll do it close enough. Gordon's over there at the draw. Gordon will get it all sussed, and we'll be, you know, logistically, it'll be a, it won't be as challenging as it was last year. God knows what happened between the draw, the balls coming out, and Gordon negotiating that, but we ended up all on a trip to Lithuania. So I don't know. We didn't work the advantage. Obviously, the Scots, the Welsh, and the Irish couldn't play nice to get a relatively close home tie. I don't know if Talca probably wasn't suitable, to be fair. Something that'll always work against us is the costs and the hotel prices in Ireland for hosting something like that. But yeah, I genuinely thought we probably would have been in Glasgow or Cardiff.
And the Reds, of course, Dazzler, no strangers to playing Lithuanian opposition in Europe. Do you remember the ins and outs of it?
No, but I'm sure you'll bring me up to speed.
Oh, 2006, Dazzler. The Intertoto Cup, the glorious Intertoto Cup that, if I remember right, had like 8 winners. So it was like this pathway through and there was like 8 different finals or something like that. And everyone got a chance. But yeah, we bet Vetra Vilnius away in 2006. Yes. Jeez. I remember being a...
The name I haven't heard in a long time.
No, you'd be right there. But like, it's one of those memories. Like, I remember I flicked through that kind of European run. Jeez, I mean... Oh, it's just outrageous. But yeah, that was the last time. 2006, Lithuanian opposition for the Reds in Europe. So no great surprise. I wonder, will there be anyone going back to old haunts in Lithuania? Now, I've no idea where in Lithuania this tournament is compared to Vilnius, which obviously where the Intertoto game was. But I'm sure there's a few Reds travelling over there that have might have a few little places earmarked. So if you do, share the knowledge. Dazzler, it's going to be a stop-start end to the season for the men's Premier Division team. It's like I was just flicking through fixture-wise there earlier on. It's kind of, I kept talking about momentum, and like if you can stay in it toward the end of the season and still be in with a shout, you know, you might be able to do something. The stop-start nature of it now might cause a little bit of an issue, do you think?
Yeah, it's a weird one. Like the way the fixtures are going to break out, like we're going to have relatively little football over the last 2 weeks. And then we're going to have, I think now with this Bowes game moved, 3 games in the space of 7 days. It'll be Cork, Bowes, Rovers, which brings its own challenges for a very, very light squad. You know, we're down numbers. We've had injury issues in recent weeks. So I think the break of not having a game for the cup last week probably wasn't a bad thing, because, you know, getting bodies right that extra week, the likes of, you know, Matty Smith, Sean Boyd, players who are struggling with injury or had been struggling with injury, the bit of time be good for them. Like it's a weird one. I always kind of look at it and some of the fixture computers in the FAI, I wonder how banjaxed they are, because like there's definitely a better way of doing it than the way it's been done for us. And look, you can argue it's your own fault for being knocked out of the cup, so you can't expect all your own way. We have to accommodate quarterfinals, semifinals, second round, etc., etc. But it does really feel like, you know, we if you can go 2 or 3 2 weeks without a game, and then obviously there's a long midsummer break, like is there not a better way?
There definitely is. Look, but I mean, how long has this issue been going on? And, you know, it still hasn't gotten resolved. As you say, yeah, probably is our own fault getting knocked out of the cup. That's why one of those big gaps crops up, is because obviously there's cup games in the meantime. But like, I think it's just more frustration at the... I feel we have a real opportunity to have a proper push for Europe. And like, I'm just looking, I have it here in front of me. Like, we had a great result against Rovers. Magic, really good. And you could have carried that momentum on, obviously. Last week was a cup weekend, so we didn't play. Now you're going into Sligo away on Saturday, which again we'll come to, but it's a very, very winnable game. If you get a result there, fair enough, you're carrying it into a Dublin derby at home to Pats. That's like a normal kind of... No, it's not. There's another week gap between that then, isn't there?
No, Pats is the second. Pats is...
Is it? That's straight away. Yeah. Sorry, the gap comes after that. The gap is to the Cork game. And then it's like these 3 fixtures all pigeonholed and rammed in together, which is a tough, tough run of games. You have to play Cork at home, who are fighting for their lives, although at this stage, if they don't end up in that playoff, Dermot Flusher won't be there much longer, I wouldn't have thought.
you enjoy that joke more than anyone.
Dermot Flusher is just... brilliant. That's a great show. So simple, so effective. But back to the serious now. We're away to Bowes then, and then we're away to Rovers. Like, oh, that's such a big week. I'd love us to, if we got 4 points from the next two games, would be a brilliant return. And then you're really into, you know, let's have a proper bash off this. I don't know, like, it is Europe a bridge too far this year?
It's not right now. I still think it's very much all open. Like, it's the thing is, last year it definitely felt like Europe and the Cup teams who were involved were at a league disadvantage. Well, it seems the playing field has been a bit level this year. Like, if you remember last year, Pats coming back from Europe played Waterford in the Cup and got knocked out of the Cup, I think it was. Bit of a shock result there. But this year it seems like the FAI are trying to schedule the Cup in a way where it's not disruptive to advance in the Cup, which is great for teams that are playing in the Cup. But it kind of removes one of the advantages you had of not having a packed fixture list, is that you might catch teams cold or might catch them tired, and there's an inherent advantage in that. Like, I don't think Europe's a bridge too far yet. I think an awful lot will depend on how the next few games go. Like, Europe lives and dies every week. That's the mad thing. That's the mad place we're at now. Like, we beat Sligo on Saturday. It's still possible. We need results to go a certain way. We need to win the games we have against the teams that are also in the European mix. Like, the Pats game, I think, is absolutely massive. It's obviously, you can't not win it from a league points perspective, from a placement perspective. But I don't think, if we finish fifth, I don't think it's been a bad season. If we finish sixth, I don't think it's been a bad season. Like, I think there probably is an element of, when you're ambitious, you can kind of set expectations a bit too high. Like, we're a newly promoted team that were in the first division in 2021. It's August 2023 now. We're in a position where we might be able to push for Europe. That's a brilliant place to be. We've been to a cup final. We're building the spine of a good squad. We approach every game in a way in which we're competitive every single week. We don't concede an awful lot of goals. We're very hard to beat. No team likes playing us. Like, a lot of those things, I would say, are measures of a team going in the right direction. If it doesn't happen for us this year, I don't think that changes anything. I don't think that, you know, would require any major surgery or change. Like, we probably are, you know, overachieving and overperforming relative to the budget and relative to the size of the squad and the quality of the squad and the depth of it, in my mind. But
people will argue that that's probably loser talk.
That's not loser talk at all. Like, when you think of, like, you want to build, and like, when Duffer came in first, it was about, you know, there was a plan and there was like this project that, no, it's not going to happen overnight. It never does. We've seen it so many times in this league before that somebody comes in, throws money at a squad, and, you know, you might get somewhere short term, but we haven't done that. It's like slowly building. There's young players there that he's built on. They're improving. Like, just off the top of my head, I think Gavin Malloy, fair enough, Brian McManus was here already, but Brian has come on leaps and bounds. He's been very unlucky with injuries, but it's definitely going in the right direction. Like, as you say, we're in the European mix-up this year. Last year, more so, probably harsh to say we're in the relegation mix-up, but, you know, we've gone from looking below us to looking above us this season. I think that's a massive progression. And as you said, like, we haven't gone out and splashed mental money on mad players like we have done in the past. Like, manager's done an amazing job. I don't care what anyone says. Like, that's, if it was anyone else doing the job he's doing on the budget he's doing it on, people would be harping on for him to get manager of the year. Like, we are that far behind some of those clubs above in terms of money that done such a good job. Look, going out of the cup when we did, I think that was a real kick in the teeth. Could it end up being a blessing in disguise? Maybe. Time will only tell on that, but
not with the way the FAI scheduled the fixtures to suit the fuckers left in the cup.
Well, look, like, but it's funny as well that, like, I was saying with the European thing and, like, the teams that are playing in Europe this year, I kept saying all along, you know, you'll catch them, you know, when they're on their European run, you know, you might catch them dopey on an old Sunday afternoon game or something like that. And then it turned out all the teams in Europe were a bag of shite except for Derry. And then, like, you're kind of going, oh, they're still kind of coming out on the good side of it. Now, Derry kind of got done over a little bit by playing on Sunday after playing Thursday, the game going to extra time, which, actually, while we're on that, what did you make of the penalties in that game?
Why do you let a keeper take a penalty on his outfield players?
Well, hang on. I'm gonna put my 2 cents on this. What kind of an outside or outfield player is allowing the keeper to take one before them?
That's what I mean.
I'm not blaming
Brian Maher. I'm asking, like, how is that from a management perspective? It's not Stephen Cluxton.
Honest with you, I think Rory Higgins was too bleeding emotional to make any decision. He was like, just never seen a manager like that, like getting knocked out on penalties in Europe must be horrific. And then to do it again on a Sunday in a cup quarter or in a cup last 16 games, even worse. But I don't know with him, he just seems too, like, kind of looking at him wanting a bit more in terms of like a leadership type thing. But at the same time, when you're in the heat of penalties like that, and Brian Maher picks up the ball to take a penalty, you'd want to have serious guts to shout onto the pitch and say, Brian, put that ball down. Somebody else is taking it, you know. Now, in fairness, I really like Brian Maher. I know him a long, long time. He's a lovely fella. But that delay in the penalty was a killer. I think he re-spot the ball 3 or 4 times, and I was sitting there watching it going, oh, no, he's finished. Forget about it. Of all the people that could have missed the penalty, like, it had to be him. Such a nice bloke, but I also enjoyed the shithousery from the Kazakhstani goalkeeper. Amazing. Did you see all that stuff going on?
I did.
Oh, it was great, brilliant. Though.
Like, what do you expect? If that was your keeper, you'd absolutely fucking love it.
Oh, he was on a wild one. Having the time of his life, the fellow was, in fairness to him. How do we get on to this? I've become an awful man for going off on a tangent, listening to too much Johnny Ward, I reckon.
I was texting Johnny Ward yesterday. It's probably not GDPR compliant, but I said, you're absolutely right about UCD. Fuck them out because they're a disgrace and a joke. Because obviously his beloved Galway were playing them and absolutely battering them. And he thinks it's Galway's Cup this year, which I think would be absolutely a disaster because we need that fourth spot to be European.
Yeah, no, zero chance Galway win the Cup. Absolutely no way. There's no way that'll happen. Too miserable, way too miserable. Imagine going into a dressing room with John Caulfield and Ollie Horgan looking back at you. That's like being in purgatory. There was something on the tip of my tongue there that I was going to mention, and now it's gone. But nevertheless, we'll move on to Sligo. It's a great L fixture. I think everyone loves Sligo away. It's amazing. Down to Saturday, nobody's under pressure for work, all the rest of it. But I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that this is a league season defining match. Is that dramatic?
No, because every game we're going to play.
I've stopped myself now. I've nearly come out with that line a couple of times in games. Like before Dundalk, I thought about it. Before the Derry game, I thought about it. Before Sligo, I thought about it. But this one, just with the time and the having a Dublin derby against Pats, and then you're into that run of 3 games in nearly a week, I just think, if you're not winning this game, because Sligo have been a bag of shite as well in the last little while, I think you need to be going out winning this.
Yeah, it's definitely a must-win game, like from a points perspective, from an opportunity to put a bit of pressure on the teams above you, it's vital. Like Sligo have had a tough few weeks. I think they are probably improving. The killer for them was, you know, the draw of the game. They drew 2-2.
You think they're improving?
Yeah, I don't think it's a gimme. Like, I don't think
it's definitely not a gimme. But
we're going to rock down there. They've lost a few bodies. Obviously, they've no Max Matta now. He's gone away. But I think they'll look at this right, and I think they'll see it as a chance to kickstart their season. They obviously bet Treaty. No fuss in the cup. So I don't know. I think they're. I think they'll ask questions. Like I think it's a must-win game, but it's not a game I assume we're just going to roll down there and batter them again.
I wouldn't be assuming it, but I...
Like Dundalk, just about scraped by them.
Yeah, but sure, Dundalk were in the middle of, well, just at the back end of a European run as well. So that's probably not. And Dundalk are no great shakes either. Like, bugs me this weird hoodoo they seem to have over us now. That really bugs me because they're bang average. Don't mind like good teams having that hanging over you, but no, I just think when you look at it, we should be like, and I'm sure the squad, like the players and staff and all that are looking at it, but from a supporter point of view, we should be looking at that league table now going, let's get up there. Like, I know I'd always be a bit of a pessimist when it comes to Shells, and it'd be like, you know, grand, Drogheda, or, you know, Cork lost, grand. That's, we definitely won't get dragged into that playoff, but, like, those teams around us, especially, like, the two above, like, Dundalk and Bowes, like, they're so average. They're so, so average. Now, the cynical come back and say, well, they're above Shells on the table, but the game, like, the amount of games we've pissed away points and the amount of smelly goals we've given away, like, I think we're a better team than Bowes and Dundalk, definitely, in terms of being effective. And like, we've conceded the fewest goals in the league. That's an unbelievable stat. Do you know, like, to go through a season, well, no, I think, are we not level now, actually, with Derry? But yeah, forget about them. They're nothing to do with us. Like, we've conceded 19 goals in 27 games. That's like league winning stuff.
That's like, brilliant. What we don't have is an Offaly type character who is scoring goals for fun every week. Like, Boydie's injury issues, I think he is such an important player, and we saw it when he came on against Cork. Like, he can magic a goal out of anything. I think if Sean Boyd hadn't have missed 4 months of football this year, do I think we'd be higher up the table? Absolutely.
Oh, like, 100%.
Without a doubt. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. Matty Smith as well. Like, I think people, because he hasn't been involved since probably the Sligo game before the break, I think is when he went off injured, shortly after he scored, if I recall correctly. I think these are massive players that are missing, and you'd hope if they can get right before the end of the season, it'd be like two new signings for that run in. And I don't think Sligo are great shakes. I think they're a bit soft. Like, I think that draw a few weeks ago probably killed them, because they were 2-0 up, looking like they were about to turn their season around, and they let Drogheda back into the game. They've lost a few games since that. Obviously, they won their cup match, so they take a bit of confidence from that. But overall, I do think they're soft. But at the same time, Doody, it's a mad, mad, mad league. Like, they will be able to pull out a result on a perfect night. Like, they fairly easily bet Cork. They bet Bowes this season in their place. They bet Derry in their place. Like, they're not complete duds at home.
No. In fairness, the only complete dud team in this league this year has been UCD. Probably Cork as well.
And we struggled to beat them at home.
Yeah, but that's just, like, you know, UCD are just a chasm. I disagree with the whole thing that, oh, they shouldn't be in the league. I think that's a load of nonsense. It's like,
no, I don't. I think, like, a bit, we should treat them like Shamrock Rovers B. Like, there was a time where UCD served a purpose in Irish football, where, you know, other teams, the likes of Shells, Bowes, Cork, Rovers, you know, there wasn't 16, 17, 18-year-olds getting into first teams. Like, there probably wasn't any 16, 17-year-olds around, you know, Nutsy's glory years team. It was older pros. But you have that now everywhere. Players are coming into first teams at younger ages because they're developing quicker with the elite leagues at, what's it start at now, under 13s?
Yes.
13s, 15s, 17s, 19s. I think younger players are coming into first teams, and the role UCD fulfilled, you know, as a sporting place to develop and learn your trade and, you know, mix education and football, I think that stuff can't be the primary aim anymore. I don't think, you know, the integrity of sport can be the primary aim anymore, because they're holding back the entire league. Like, the fact is, people see a UCD fixture, and home fans, it's a tough sell. Away fans don't exist. There's no UCD support. And I just think for the league to grow, you need Waterford, you need Galway, you need, in a few years, hopefully a Kerry team. Like, how grim would it be if UCD stay up and, you know, Waterford don't come up?
Like, well, I don't understand how, like, loads of people say that, oh, they're holding the league back and all that type of crack. But if you're, like you're saying there about like Waterford coming up or Galway or whatever, don't get relegated. Like, does this whole thing that like, oh, Waterford should be in the Premier Division, UCD shouldn't. UCD got promoted. Like, it's not as if somebody turned around and was like, ah, yeah, there you go, UCD, you just go play in the Premier Division. Like, Waterford got themselves relegated. Galway got themselves relegated. Longford, all these clubs, it's their own fault. It's not UCD's fault.
No, but that's why it's on the league to figure out a way to make it work. Like, I think sporting merit is not the only way to run a football league. Like,
sport, that's a bit harsh, I think, sporting merit now. Like, it's not as if they've, you know, they get promoted and they finish on like 4 or 5 points every year and like they get relegated. It's not, you know. Like,
how disastrous would it be if UCD got to a cup final? For football in Ireland.
Yeah, but like, you can't just, that's not a reason to throw UCD out.
No, you don't, like, throw them out.
We can't see you, like, you know, you shouldn't be in this division because no, you don't bad throw on them us out. If you qualify. But it looks,
you don't,
like,
throw them out.
But it looks,
you
like
don't throw them out.
Absolutely, yeah. Terrible for every other team in the country who couldn't beat UCD along the way. If they're meant to be this disaster of a club.
But they're not a disaster of a club. They're a very good football operation. But the thing is, like, the League of Ireland can't be solely run on football operations now. Like, I would think that club licensing should look at venues, grounds, you know,
but
fans,
gate receipts.
There's nothing
wrong with UCD. Like, yeah, they don't get the bodies in the gate, but as a facility.
As facility-wise, it's fine, but as a club, I don't think the League of Ireland will prosper and grow if regional teams are down in a first division and a university team is in the top tier. You don't remove them from the league, and that would be wrong, but if they get relegated on merit, like, do they have what's needed on a football basis to continue as a Premier Division club, potentially? But do they have what's needed on a whole club basis to be a Premier Division club in terms of infrastructure, in terms of fans, in terms of what they actually bring to the league? I would say no.
But then people will give out about the professionalism of it and, you know, full-time teams. UCD are a full-time team. Effectively, maybe not officially, but they are. Like, I just don't get this whole thing of, like, discounting UCD because they don't get supporters in the gate. Like, that's really the only thing people have to go off. Like, I've seen a few things this week about, oh, they didn't have updates up for the cup game and blah blah blah. That, like, there's other clubs that have done that, like, and have very little in terms of a presence online and all that type of stuff. But just, I don't buy this thing that because they don't have supporters, they shouldn't be in the Premier Division. Like, that's,
I just think they're a vacuum, they're a black hole. Like, it's not just they don't have supporters, it's that they also hurt other clubs. Like, UCD coming to Talca, if you have someone in a 50-50 whether or not they'll bother turning up to that game and they see UCD or the opposition, they're not going to go. Like, I think the issue is that as a...
We'll take other clubs then as an example. Like, what would happen if, like, the way it is now, Bray got promoted, or pretty much most of those smelly first division clubs at the moment, Athlone, like Treaty.
Treaty and there's 700-800 people there at Markets Fields. Like, that's not insignificant. That is, you know, what a first division club would bring. Wexford the same, Cove Ramblers the same. They're not massive clubs, but they are clubs with history and a future. And I would just wonder what UCD's future is in a league with growing gates where we're trying to professionalise the game, grow the community, grow the fan bases. I just think UCD hamper that. They don't help it. And I don't think they help themselves. Like, there's a ready-made fan base for that football club. How many people go to UCD studying it as a university?
Yeah, well, like, that's a question, but I think that's going back years and years that they never. So, like, I remember going to the Old Ball as a kid.
If they're not doing it, duty, well, then what's the future for them?
But, like, who's to say that, like, there's always been, like, great groups of players coming through UCD or great individuals or whatever it might be that come in. Like, who's to say that in 2 or 3 years' time they won't have an unbelievable team? and they could come up to the Premier Division and they could compete and, you know, finish sixth or seventh. Like, do you still throw them out then? Or are you only discounting them because they're bottom of the league at the moment?
A football competitive UCD is the absolute worst thing that could happen to the League of Ireland. Genuinely. There could be nothing worse than a UCD team that would be up pushing, because there'd still be no one in the ground and they'd still be a vacuum and a black hole for interest and growing the league. So I think as a football entity, UCD on merit, brilliant. But I think every other aspect of the game is growing. The attendances, LOI TV, there's professional infrastructure being put in place. Other clubs, including our own, continue to grow their off-the-field operations and commercial media marketing. They're not doing any of that. They've no intention of doing any of that. You'd wonder if they have a strategy to even bother to get people into their games. Is it something they even want to, or did they just accept, we've never had a fan base, so sure, what's the point in trying to start now? The issue I would have is, like, what do they add to the game outside of the on-the-pitch product and outside of their history? Because their history as a, you know, place to develop brilliant young players, without question, they've been a fantastic part of the league in terms of that, and they've created many, many players over the years. But the future of the game, do they help or hinder the League of Ireland growing? For me, they hinder.
We might have to agree, disagree.
Could you not have a Shamrock Rovers B scenario where UCD continue to do everything they already do, and that's fine, and if they win on sporting merit, that's grand. The team who finish just behind them are the ones that'll go.
No, I don't like that at all, because then Rovers are just, and it wouldn't be an unfair advantage, because look, Rovers are in the position they're in because they're the best team. But I don't like the idea of a Rovers being able to swallow up like all those kind of good young players and then sending them off down to a B team to play in the first division. I think that's going to grow the gap between the teams in the Premier Division, because it's literally like having an academy team within the league.
You miss me. I don't want a Rovers B. I want the same rules that were on Rovers B to apply to a UCD, where UCD still exists. They're still UCD. They still play the Belfield Bowl. But if they finish top of the division, they don't go up. Same way Shamrock Rovers B would have not come up. So it's like you're still part of it. You can still develop players. You can still compete for things. But until you, like, even if UCD even had a plan to, you know, capitalize on the catchment area they have and the amount of students that go there, if they were shown any kind of desire or will to try and, you know, grow as a club, you'd say, well, yeah, look, it's, they've traditionally been really bad, but they're working their backside off to change it. They're not. That's the reality of it. They're not. I don't think they're that bothered about their fans or their fan base or what they give to the league overall outside of a football perspective, because it's the same as they've always done. So while the entire league is trying to be better and grow outside of football, it looks to me that they're just saying, yeah, this is what we do, this is what we give. Why, we're not changing it.
Well, somebody please think of the children.
I'm going to end up in the UCD Ultras group. All three of them will be angry.
We actually, seeing some very, very funny stuff after that UCD game, the last one, the win we got. Do you remember that out the gate, your man kicking all the kids out and not letting them back in? I said, I know where your father lives.
There's actually young people going to UCD games and trying to create a bit of an atmosphere, and they're getting thrown out of the ground.
And threatened by a grown man.
Yeah.
Oh, not ideal. Look, speaking of breeding grounds and young players within the league and building and trying to develop, we had Tony O'Neill on here a few weeks ago, and he alluded to there'd be a few announcements coming up in the upcoming weeks. One of those announcements is the new partnership between the Reds and Malahide Football Club.
That's a massive one. Dewey, I think you'd be able to speak to it. You know, and can explain how big a club they are. And
Malahide are a massive, massive schoolboy club. Even their senior section now has been very, very good in the last couple of years. The catchment area that football club has is huge. All that area, North County Dublin, like, that's Malahide country. Like, if you're a strong kind of underage player, you're more than likely playing for Malahide United. They've produced two of our players, JJ and Jack Moylan. I know Jack spoke really highly of them when we had him here on the podcast, of his development and coming up through Malahide. It was a great place to be. They produced players that are playing in England, playing in the league here, outside of Shells. They cover all ages, all genders, the teams in TDSL, the NDSL, the Metropolitan Girls League. Malahide are everywhere, and they're a huge, huge club. And like, to get a club like that on board is huge, because they're one of the clubs who would fancy themselves to be able to do it on their own, if that makes sense. But we are obviously offering Malahide something really, really good and useful, something that's going to help them along if they're agreeing to be a partnership with Shells, because it's a massive club, great people, great facilities, and just another real step in the right direction.
Yeah, it's a huge one, especially for that area in North County Dublin. I think it's the massive benefit. I don't know if people notice, but it's across the whole academy. It's the men's academy under Collie Barron, the women's academy under Rory Kirk, and both will feed into it. The full details of exactly what the kind of public parts of the partnership entails is on the website, but there's a real sense of this can be a game-changing relationship for the club with a schoolboy section. And, you know, the comparison that it was is the kind of the changer that Bowes had when they brought Kevins into the fold and they started working together. It's not going to be the very same. It's not the same kind of partnership, but that kind of ability to transform the fortunes of both club kind of development pathways is what the aim and ambition is. So it's really, really positive. It's one of those things where they would have had plenty of offers. You know, they would have had offers from people an awful lot further south than us. They would have had their door banged down by two other Dublin League of Ireland clubs. So the fact that they've agreed this partnership with the club is a brilliant testament to the work being done at the levels led by, you know, Collie and Rory and other people involved in the academy.
Yeah, and they had a relationship with Dundalk as well, because I remember when the underage leagues in the League of Ireland started, the schoolboy clubs all kind of partnered up with somebody because they didn't want to be left behind, wanted to be able to keep that kind of, I hate the word, but the elite kind of level within the club, and they had partnered with Dundalk as far as I remember. So like that, you've probably pried them away from what you've probably four or five clubs there, and they've gone with Shells on top of it. The way I like it, and you put out a press release just before we start recording, and I had a chance to have a quick little flick through it. What I liked about it is it's not, and Tony spoke about this, it's not you're going to be our partner club, we're going to take all your good players to play in our underage teams, and good luck, there's a handshake, off you go out the door. Like, we'll use you as we need you. Like, there's plans to send coaches into Malahide to put sessions on. The Malahide coaches are welcome in the Shells Academy to watch sessions, to get involved. Players who are probably able for the level are going to be invited to play in tournaments and stuff like that for the Shells underage players, but then they'll go back to their own team in Malahide and continue to develop. That does not happen in schoolboy football in this country. I can tell you that from experience. It's, we're taking him, little Darren Cleary, little star left full that he is. He's coming to sign for us, and bye-bye, see you later, good luck. We might send them back to do an old, you know, medal ceremony or something for you if he makes it at the top. Whereas this is an actual functional, this is what we can offer you. You can offer us this. Let's meet in the middle and let's continue to grow. A massive thing. People may not know the significance of it. It's a huge, huge thing to have. A massive club, Malahide, are. And yeah, it's all looking rosy. And more.
Yeah, it felt like it went under the radar a bit, didn't it?
Oh, it did. Like, schoolboy football is a very, very small community in this country. Like, everyone knows what's going on all the time. I had no idea that this completely came out of blue for me anyway. Not saying I know any more than anyone else, but usually you'd hear something, you know, along the way of, oh, did you hear? Or people would be getting on to me with the Shells hat and saying, like, oh, have you heard anything about this new partnership? I hadn't a clue. So probably a good, Tony mentioned trust an awful lot as well. There's obviously that trust there because it didn't seem to really go beyond who needed to know about it. So, here, there's going to be a club day as well. Malahide all the teams will be invited down. There'll be a discounted price for members of Malahide United. It's, there's so much stuff, too much for us to rattle through here in the podcast. So definitely get online, Twitter, everywhere. You'll be able to find the news article on it and read it for yourself. As I say, too much for us to rattle on about here. Dazzler, probably nearly there. Any more club news?
Well, I was just going to say, a part of it that is going to be very, very important is bringing people from Malahide, club members, their players, their coaches, their parents, into Talca on a Friday night and a Saturday afternoon. A big part of the club's remit is to grow the gates and grow the fan base and not just, you know, one-off hits where, come on down to Talca, play on halftime and then never come here again. Like, there will be discounted tickets, there'll be complimentary tickets, there will be access for players and coaches of Malahide, and that's a big part of it. And I don't want to trudge back up the old UCD argument, but the club is doing everything within its power to make new relationships and try and invite and bring people in. This thing with Malahide, a part of it will be inviting people down to be supporters of our senior teams, our men's and women's teams. The Reds Hat-Trick Initiative obviously is very overtly aimed at getting people down to the Women's National League team for the Saturdays for three free games. So the club is working very, very hard to expand the fan base and continue to grow. It's in a very, very positive place at the moment. Season ticket numbers were the highest they've ever been, and that includes the good years. And season ticket revenue was the highest it's ever been. Obviously, the prices went a wee bit up, so that was probably part of it. And there was a few more people who signed up. But it's not about stopping and self-congratulating and saying how great things are. There's a proper strategy around growing the fan base and increasing the marketing. And I know, Duty, we mentioned last week there was a marketing role open for an executive to join the team. There was a massive demand and a huge amount of interest in that, just volume of people who applied for it. So there'll be someone in situ in the coming weeks, which is a brilliant place to be. There's another new role open on the ETB course, an assistant course coordinator. All the details are on shelburnefc.ie, and there should be another one or two roles hired in various aspects of the club operations off the field between now and the end of the season. So I can't stress enough that probably does come across as party political propaganda broadcast at times, but it is in a very, very positive place.
This, we're all rolling in the right direction. Thank God. No fixture for No Kings Chargers this weekend. They're off because they got a bye in the first round of the FAI Cup. Obviously, Damien, those Chargers are away to Sligo Rovers on Saturday evening. If you can't travel to the game, it's going to be live on LOI TV. Dazzler, prediction, please.
I am going to go with 2-0 Shells.
2-0 Shells. I'm going to go for what am I going to go with? I'm going to go with a 3-1 Shells. We'll catch them on the break right at the end to make a 3, and there'll be pandemonium in Sligo Town after the game. Think we're there, Dazzler?
Well, we've one more piece of news, Duty. A big departure we've yet to announce. We had a press release planned and the whole lot, but we decided that we'd share it on the podcast instead. Duty.
Yeah. I let it be known straight away, I was very, very against this. Very, very against this. I wanted to just rip off the plaster as it was, never be seen again. But I'm not going to be hosting the podcast going forward. Nothing to do with the club or anything like that. My own decision, I basically got an offer to go back coaching, and I had only been talking to you lads in the car, going to one of the away games about it, that I felt like it was passing me by a little bit, the coach, and I think I'm 5 years out of it or something like that now. So I got asked back, basically, and yeah, there's a lot of background to it. I've kind of walked away from it at a difficult time in my life. We'd lost somebody within the football club that I'm going back to, and just wasn't really the same place. But I think time has moved on enough, and I'm ready to go back and give it a go and see how I get on. I won't be a total stranger. I'll still be giving you lads a dig out on a match day with any kind of bits and pieces that need doing. But yeah, you won't be hearing my voice hosting the 1895 podcast for the rest of the season. Sad times.
Very sad times. Sad times indeed. I'm glad you were on to tell us, because the last time we had a change in podcast presenter, we didn't mention it. It just kind of happened, and everyone assumed that he'd been sacked for saying Aidan Friel was not good enough for the Premier Division. Not one of those statements is true. he was not sacked. But Doody, thank you very much for everything, for always being available on a Monday or a Tuesday evening, hail, rain or shine. And yeah, you're not going to be too far away, but stepping away from the pod, the search for a successor begins.
Yeah, I just actually to mention, you've mentioned there about the last host who people bandied about the idea he was sacked for speaking down on the players. That's Gav White, of course, we're talking about. And I know Gav listens, so I just want to say thanks to him, because all of this nonsense I've gotten involved in within the club in the last couple of years started with him. He took me on as the commentator during COVID, and it kind of grew from there. You came into the communications role. You basically said, here's a podcast. Go ahead. You do what you feel is right. It's definitely brought me out of my shell. I wouldn't have been a great talker. It sounds weird considering I ended up commentating and hosting a podcast, but brought me out of my shell. Even at 30 years of age, it was great to do something different. Who knows? I may end up back at it at some stage, but for now, I just couldn't, with family life and all that as well. There wasn't enough days in the week to include everything. So, Dazzler, we're not going to get all soppy, but thanks a million for everything. Thanks for your help, your guidance, your understanding at times as well. And yeah, it's been good crack.
It's been great crack. Thank you for everything. Before we let you go, we're going to do your teammates. You've got this far without doing it. So do you want to do people in the club? People, you know, staff, volunteers, that kind of thing?
What do you think? You know what? I'm no longer the host. I don't have to make these pressured decisions anymore. So you're looking.
But you can do anyone of the staff and volunteers.
So not playing staff now, just people involved in the club.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, okay. So
if you want to leave 2 feet in on Andy McGowan.
I gotta get sacked off the media list for this, haven't I?
Yeah, well, you're leaving anyway, so focus. Easiest to wind up.
I'm gonna say you.
Bit harsh.
No, why? You're 100%. How many times have you said to me, "You just seem to have my number. I don't know what it is. You just seem to be able to get under my skin a bit."
Yeah,
so
you do.
You've admitted to that one. So yeah, definitely you.
Best banter.
Alan Smith.
Worst banter.
Reggie.
Who is the worst trainer? I don't know how you apply this to the club. Who's the laziest?
The laziest. Now, club volunteers as well. Ooh, that's a hard one, actually. Because in fairness, there is a good old group there, like behind the scenes. Whatever about, you know. Actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go back and I'm going to say the laziest person I've ever seen in the club. I won't give his name, but he has since left us and gone back to the UK. He was lazy.
Right. Who is the last person you want to be stuck beside on the bus to Finn Harps?
Andy McGowan.
Who makes you laugh the most?
I'm going to say Graham or Johnny Watson.
Likely to get you arrested on a night out?
Getting the cue. Likely to get you arrested on a night out. It probably has to be Alan Smith again.
Who thinks, yeah.
He gets very loose fingers on a night out as Alan Smith.
He does. He's a bit of a carnage man. A bit of a chaos merchant. Who thinks they're funnier than they are?
Oof. You know who I'm going to go with here? I don't know whether this counts or not, but Eddie, the security fella.
Eddie's jokes definitely counts. Eddie, hi, you're getting thrown out. What? I'm serious. All right, Eddie.
Show me your ID, Eddie. Please, man. I'm 30 years of age. I have a receding hairline and a massive beard, and I look about 45 years of age. Leave me alone.
Eddie hates the Reds. Who is the wannabe manager?
I considering the reason that I'm not doing the pod anymore, I don't have to say me, do I? Either me or Andy McGowan again.
Poor old Andy. Who's the fashion failure?
Keith McDerby.
He's got that t-shirt with a zip that makes him look like he's in a 70s porno.
Keith's a great man, an absolute legend.
Dodgy, dodgy clobber. Who's the first person to slide into Owen Smith's DMs? I believe we established this was a physio.
Yes, a physio that is no more. Who else? Who'd be quick now to look for an old snap? Could probably say Johnny Watson. I don't think he knows how to slide into somebody's DMs, but I think he'd be likes the camera, we'll say.
I've definitely got a message that said send pic pal a few times. Who's the hard man?
Ooh, Bilko.
Remember he shouted at your man in Galway and he wet himself.
Yeah, he was my personal bodyguard that night.
And who is the man you want on your team in training? I don't know how you train to be on the Shells media team.
I'm going to say you. It's a bit soppy, but jack of all trades, can do a bit of everything, consistent, always there if you're needed. That's a sign of a good trainer.
That's a man who wants the door left open to a return.
No, you know what? This place stinks of a Hotel California where you might be able to check out for a little while, but you're never actually leaving. So, yeah I wouldn't be holding my breath. I'm being away too long.
I'm proud of you for not leaving after you had a few fallouts. You know, a few hairy moments with players over the years that you criticised.
Oh, so we're going to go full Father Ted on this, the golden cleric, and now we move on to liars. There's been a few. Look, there was a few kind of hairy moments. Myself and JR Wilson, I know JR won't mind saying it, that I probably criticised him. Did I go in two-footed on him? I was naive, I would say, at that stage. And of all places, we ironed it out after the cup final. After a few points, and then JR went and handed his phone to, was it Owen Smith? It was like, here, go and get the lads around the drinks, but the phone had locked by the time he got up to the bar, so Smith got stung with the tab. But yeah, JR was one. There's a more recent one, but I don't know.
Yeah, leave it.
We won't go there, but yeah, there's been a few falling outs, a few people with, you know, having a pop over stuff that's been said on here, or the way we've done things on here, or, you know, there's always going to be people like that. I took it very personally at the start, and you probably talked me around in that and kind of, you know, said, look, for 99 people that love it, there's one person that doesn't like it, and they're always going to be the one that's heard. So I kind of adopted that philosophy in the last few weeks. More people than you would think do have nice things to say, though. I definitely learned that. Like, it's always nice if somebody stops you and talks to you, you know, it's kind of like, ah, I listened to the pod during the week, it was great, or fair play, you know, that interview was really good. So, yeah, that's been a real positive, but just the crack has been great. Even, like, getting to sit down with players is a massive thing. Like, nearly forgot to mention, sitting down with the manager. Like, and I'm having the respect for the pod to actually come in and sit down and talk to some bluffer who was sitting across the way who was absolutely sweating all day at the thought of it. So, yeah, look, it's been great. I'm probably not looking forward. I'm sure the manager's going to have some kind of stick for me now that I've left. But never know. He might invite me up to training to get a few ideas. Never know.
Yeah, he could be joining the staff. Stranger things have happened.
Don't have the badges, Dazzler. Don't have the badges. Couldn't afford them.
I don't think your missus listens to this podcast. So can you tell the story now of the day you had to do the interview with the manager?
Oh, God. Yeah, so the only time Damien was available was during the day. I, of course, have a 9-to-5 job and a small child and a missus at home. So generally speaking, it's 9 to 5 straight home, and you know, I always kind of found the time in the evening to squeeze this in, but that particular day I just had to. There was no way I was going to miss out on a chance to interview Damien Duff, so I was basically on the Mitch from work and from my missus at the same time. I was playing one off the other. She thought I was in work. My boss thought I was at home with her. And yeah, I was like, wasn't far off going around with, like, you know, the fake nose and mustache and eyes, like glasses through town, because I was convinced somebody was going to spot me, because I'm pretty sure my boss was in town doing deliveries, and that's obviously where we recorded the pod. So yeah, there's been a few hairy moments like that with, you know, having to tell a few porky pies here and there, but look, we got there in the end. We got a few episodes done, and as I say, it has been good crack.
Always so, worth it for the rest.
Who's the replacement?
I'm waiting on the replacement to contact me. So if you'd like to take over from Stephen Doody, drop me an email.
Open mic night, is it?
It is. We are on the hunt for a new host of the 1895 podcast. If you pop me an email, darren.cleary@shelburnefc, or slide into the DMs of the club on Instagram, Twitter, if you're interested. If you have any background in audio, media, football, all helps. Doody, I think it's fair to say that you don't require a massive amount of technical know-how. It's straightforward enough to edit and publish a podcast.
Yeah, if I can do it, anybody can. Because what was the... Gav White once said, Doody can't do SoundCloud. And now look at me. Now look at me. But from that end of it, like, if you are somebody that's looking to get involved, you won't get more help and guidance and that than you will from the lads. The lads are great. A great help. I came into this knowing absolutely nothing about anything. Still don't know anything about nothing, in fairness, but managed to get a podcast out every week, so we'll take that. But yeah, if you are interested, just what I would say to you is just give it a bash. It was like that with the commentary during COVID. Never done it in my life. Went, gave it a bash, and it's the best thing I ever did. So get in touch.
And that's where we leave it, Doody, for the final time. Do you want to sing us out?
I won't sing us out, but I will say, up the Reds.
This podcast was brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. For all the latest sports news, visit otbsports.com. Rest in the sunset. Where